The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. On this edition of Century, we look at health and social responses for women who use drugs. The European Union Drugs Agency, in collaboration with the cooperation program between Latin America, the Caribbean, and the European Union on drug policies, COPALAD for short, recently held a webinar entitled Health and Social Responses for Women Who Use Drugs, Perspectives from Latin America, the Caribbean, and Europe. First, let's hear from Linda Montanari, principal scientist at the European Union Drugs Agency.
Women who use drugs have also specific issues that I will talk briefly about, but those should be analyzed and seen in intersection with other factors that are other discriminatory factors that should be considered. So here is a graphic showing the lifetime prevalence of drug use and the male to female ratio among all adults in the 27 member states by substance. By illicit substances in the graph in the left and the illicit substance in the right. What I wanted to show is that we know that the highest prevalence is cannabis, then followed by cocaine, ecstasy, and amphetamine. But when we look at the male to female ratio, the highest male to female ratio, which means the highest proportion of men, we found for cocaine and the lowest for cannabis. There are several factors influencing these patterns, but for sure one of these is the social acceptability of the substances, the normalization of the substances. And we know that among the illicit substances, cannabis is surely the more socially acceptable. And this can be confirmed also from the other graphic on the right, which is presented the prevalence of alcohol use in the different European countries. And you can see that the proportion of men and women is the same, more or less, very similar. In some country, the females are even higher than the men. And that's probably is also related to the fact that alcohol is an illicit substance and is much more socially acceptable. So for women, it's easier on one hand to use this. But we have also to remember that women who use drugs are part of the general population and are living in a social context. In this graph, in the map, it is reported the male to female ratio among clients that enter treatment. Darkest is the color, higher is the proportion of men. And as you can see, the Southern European country have the darkest color, while the Northern European country, in particular the Scandinavian country, have the clearest color. So they have more equality and more similarity in the patterns of accessing treatment. And this has a certain correspondence with the what is reported in the general population. In the wheel on the your right, you can see the gender equality index. The latest one is 70, and we know that the full equality is 100%, with the countries from the Scandinavian and the north of Europe reporting the highest equality. And so there are several factors, but surely probably in those countries, women and men access more similar to treatment or behaving more similar. Of course, there are also methodological issues. But this is the next one, yes, thank you, should be intersected with other factors. Here is shown the intersection with age and generation. So from the web survey, you can see that the oldest is the older are the population, higher is the proportion of men, while the youngest people behave more similar between boys and girls. And as confirmed in literature, we can see the prevalence, the intensity of drug use, and you can see that for last month prevalence, which is an indirect indicator of intensity, the male to female ratio is higher. But as I say, there are specific issues that concern women who use drugs. I just listed some here, so there are consequences from injecting drug use that are specific to women. Mental health problem, the fact that women are often victim of gender-based violence, pregnant and mothers, and then there are setting or specific subgroup, women in prison, ethnic minority, and women LGBTQIA+. I will just briefly talk about some of this group, not all of them, because there is no time. So next slides. This is reporting the HCV prevalence among people who inject drugs, males and females, in studies conducted in 28 countries. As you can see, the prevalence is quite similar between males and females, while we know that this is not the case in the general people who inject drugs. And the reason for this, for one hand, is the higher biological vulnerability of women, but also the higher tendency to share injecting equipment with the partners or your drug and the peers, although this tendency is changing in the latest time with more agency of the women who use drugs as well. And also the fact that women are more usually involved in sex work. In this case, they have less also negotiation power for using protection to not to contract infectious diseases. We say another specific issue is the mental health problem. It is reported in literature that women have higher prevalence of mental health problem, and this graph reporting the proportion of suicidal intent among those who die from an overdose. And as you can see in the countries reporting this data, all countries except two report a higher proportion of females, so which can be an indication of higher prevalence of mental health problem. However, I think there are issues that should be better explored, like how the professional make the diagnosis, how the toxicology also define that this is a suicidal intent, and what is the difference and the possible also bias and gender bias in also in these practices. A big issue we know among women who use drugs is gender-based violence. All people, especially the high-risk drug users, they are often reported violence, but this is particularly high among women who use drugs. These are results reported from a European project on gender-based violence and drugs. And when they interview the women who use drugs with high-risk drug use, and the large majority were victim of some type of violence. And here are reported the different type of violence, from psychological violence, physical violence, economic violence, and sexual violence, which is really important to be divided in two parts. So the sexual violence and abuse during childhood and the sexual violence during adult. That we don't have, apart from this data, we don't have common data, but it's something that probably we have to further develop and we have to pay more attention on. The gender-based violence can be an explanation also for drug use. Among women, often the past trauma, which is often cumulated and repeating during the life, among those who are more living with more problematic life, can be a risk factor for drug use as a way to alleviate trauma and probably indicate also an under treatment. But on the other hand, also drug use can come before gender-based violence. In this case, we talk about drug sexual facilitators assault, which can be like proactive when the aggressor give drugs in order to perpetrate violence on the other, or can be also opportunistic when the woman is intoxicated and not able to take a decision in this case, and aggressor profit from for gender conducting gender violence. Also in this case, there are not common data, but there are indication that 4 or 5% among those who were victim of violation were drug sexual facilitators assault. And finally, motherhood is for sure an issue which is extremely important for women. Here, there are the data on clients entering drug treatment, living with children. As you can see, while among the 80% of clients entering treatment are men and 20 are women, when we look at those living with children, still women, of course, they are the main protagonists because they are still the main carer of children. So this is a big issue. So what are the available intervention in Europe? There are international guidelines from UNODC, the Pompidou Group also published guidance on the integration of a gender perspective in the drug policy, and the European Drug Action Plan, the PAST Action Plan. They pay some attention, they indicate some objective on women. The last one was more specific, indicating the need to reduce barrier to treatment, to have a gender-sensitive approach, and have more effort to outreach and to reach the women. But we hope and we are committed to have more attention to this aspect in the next plan. We have looked at what the countries reported on gender perspective included in the intervention. What we found is, first of all, there is not much still, as Alexis was saying before. So there are still several countries where there are no gender-specific intervention. I was just looking now at the latest report, and it's still the case. But there are some, and there are some countries that are having attention to gender perspective and to women in particular, but often this is focusing on pregnancy and maternity, which is, of course, a very important aspect. But as we have seen before, there are many more, also many other issues that should be tackled that are probably also very important as a preventive factor. And there are barriers to access treatment. First of all, the stigma, which is higher and multiplied for women and multiplied for a layer of deviance or of marginalization, the lack of resources, including economic resources for women, which is normal because it's mirroring what is happening in the general population, also fear to enter treatment, which can be stigmatizing, judgmental, and finally, the fear to have to see the children taken out from them. But as you say, effort have been done. I won't enter into the specific of this example, but we can provide with the slides and all the information. There are several countries that have done several effort in the direction of having more gender responsive intervention and more attention to women's need. So implementing trauma-informed care or working a lot on stigma among women, but among the professional as well, in order to have a less judgmental, stigmatizing intervention, to have more involvement of people who use drugs, of peer, to have harm reduction services, and of course, having several type of intervention that are directed to mother and children.
That was Linda Montanari, principal scientist at the European Union Drugs Agency, speaking on a webinar entitled Health and Social Responses for Women Who Use Drugs, Perspectives from Latin America, the Caribbean, and Europe. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Now, let's hear from Professor Karina Giacomello, PhD, a researcher at the Institute for Judicial Studies at the Autonomous University of Chiapas.
Let's start to see where we are located. Latin America and the Caribbean, it's a huge region with a large diversity between the countries. And it's good to know that many people who are joining us in this region, we have a presentation from Uruguay also, and everybody will try to highlight the differences in the practices and the regulations on this topic. But something that they share in common is that it's the most unequal region in the world. We have women who use substances and criminalized women for drug crimes in the regional context where they are. The data comes from the CEPAL, and that's the ECLAC. And we show that in Latin America and the Caribbean, 172 million people do not have enough income to meet their basic needs. And those who are mostly affected are women. And this is a very sensitive issue. It's mostly young women and adolescents. They are usually in the highest poverty line. This also has to do for the future and other topics that affect women, which is the care economy. That is, the women who are paid for or not paid for care activities at home or outside the home. So the care economy is one of the axes of gender equality that we see. And it's going to increase because we have a population that is aging. Here we see the feminization of poverty. In 2022, for every 100 men living in poor households in the region, there were 118 women living in poor households. A couple of weeks ago, the ECLAC published a report from where it says that the levels of poverty have increased. It says that poverty has lowered, but this is not the same for the inequality in Latin America and the region. We're talking about the rights of women and their participation in the work market and in economic empowerment. Regarding women who use substances, there are many topics that are cross-cutting. As you can see on the slide, there's a COPOLAD report that looks at the intersectional issues affecting women who use drugs and women in prison for drug offenses. It analyzes, it has a quantitative approach here. This is part of a study written with my friend and colleague, Maria Pia Pavlovic. We hope that this will be ready in the coming months. And it's about women who use substances in Latin America and the Caribbean, and what is the response of the health sector. Some of the topics that we see here, and we've already heard before, that we're talking about gender violence against women and adolescents. Especially in Latin America, Caribbean is a phenomenon that affects this very much. We see women that use drugs in prison. They probably start from the when they are infants. Many times they have sexual violence, and the state has to intervene as another actor of violence, symbolic or direct, through the detention processes and convictions, imprisonment, and the lack of comprehensive services for women who use drugs. The fact that there is no response is also violence. We already talked about the economy of care. This has to do with life stories of women. Many times women that use substances are the only caregivers for the children at home. And also women who are in contact, many times women are getting involved in criminal activities because of these issues. So we have to see how women are involved in some activities, but also the consequences and the lack of response from the state. There are inequalities in access to health services. We have inequalities in access to health services between the countries, like Argentina, Uruguay, Chile have greater offer, and others that have greater difficulties to offer services for women in the countries. And of course, where we have indigenous populations, we also see less services offered to women. We also have the lack of services. Many times we don't have a reduction in risks in prisons either. Criminalization of substance use related conducts has to do with justice services also, and people don't go to these services if they will be criminalized. Also, when we talk about maternity, this is a lack of going to the services where women have to face greater challenges among stigma, and also the women that are in prison for drug problems, they are usually carers from the inside. So Regarding women that use psychoactive substances, we have a testimony from Lisa from Mexico. This is a very good publication because it gives us a diversity of experiences with events that are repeated in different countries. And Lisa says that women that she met in rehab centers, they all come from the same reasons. They all come for abuse, for ill treatment, because their father uses drugs. They come from different stories of connection, but I think we all went through rape. That's something that we found in a woman that uses substances. And I can assure you that after speaking to hundreds of women who are in prison, I do not know of any women who have not gone through the same things. They have these life stories that affect them. We know that in Latin America and the Caribbean and also in Europe, the number of women using substances, psychoactive substances, including tobacco, is lower than that of men. However, in the adolescent generations, this gap is closed, and in the case of controlled medicines, it's reversed. And despite increasing evidence on the vulnerable situations affecting women who use substances, drug policies in general, and those linked to substance use in particular, maintain a male-centered approach and have less availability of exclusive services for women. This is something very serious because we continue to see in parallel, but not working together, the services that have women survivors of gender violence and the services for women that use substances, if these exist, because there are, as I said, there's a lack of these services for women. This is something that happens around the world. Women that use drugs and that they want to go to women who are survivors of violence. We know of all the barriers we have and all the cases that we have before a woman can reach somebody to help her because of gender violence. If it's a psychoactive substance, she probably won't have access to the service. And that is a risk for her safety, for her life, and their children's safety. So it's necessary that those services work together. Also, the use of gender violence, the use of substances, and criminalization happens many times in parallel. Regarding women in prison for drug offenses, we know that this is one of the leading causes of women's incarceration in the region in a disproportionate way with regards to men, and many in transit countries, this is the reason why they're incarcerated. Usually poor women are involved. Many times this is conditioned by the care economy, gender violence, poverty, and involvement in criminal networks, drug trafficking also, and also romantic love. And then we go back to women criminalized for consumption-related activities. That is, women who are in prison for lesser sanctions. And however, women in the region, we see that there is punitive actions in drugs with the use of preventive imprisonment, jure o de facto, in a disproportionate manner, and the lack of alternatives to imprisonment. And we know the Inter-American Commission of Human Rights showed us in 2023 women that are imprisoned, where we see imprisonment conditions that are not respectful of human rights, much less for women, and even much less for women that live with their children. Another aspect is children with mothers and fathers deprived of liberty and with mothers and fathers who use drugs. This is something that has been approached in a very good way by the Pompidou Group. And the first problem that we see is that there's invisible populations in the drug agenda and children's rights agenda. This is the source, is NAPES platform, as you can see in the picture.
Of course, we have two different kinds of influences, but they have many things in common. The first thing is that they are completely invisible in the drug agenda and the children's rights agenda. The other thing is that there's lack of quantitative data regarding how many children and adolescents are affected by these drug policies. And that lack of data is what is, makes us not know how many children this involves. We also have stigma as a problem. And also there's taboo and secrecy about what's happening. They have uncertainty, they have guilt, shame. They're also afraid of being separated from their families. So this is something that we have to keep in mind. We also have lack of effective participation mechanisms, programs in schools and society at large, institutionalization. We have to listen to these boys and girls. There's another work being done by the Pompidou group where there are a lot of proposals for boys and girls and adolescents. And also these programs in schools where children spend most of their time, they usually don't have programs or mechanisms for participation that will allow these children or adolescents to be heard. So apart from the gender issue, it's also important to keep in mind these influences. And now my conclusions and proposals. These are very general conclusions. First of all, I want to say that it's obvious that we need to have comprehensive services for women, their daughters, and sons, because how the lives of women are impacted for those that consume drugs and also those that are involved in drug actions. We need a reduction of the use of criminal law and improvement of conditions of detention. We also, when this doesn't happen, we need to have an improvement in the imprisonment conditions. I would love to see that prisons are empty, but this is not going to happen. So we have to continue working on improving the conditions of the prisons. We need to have raising awareness campaigns because there's still a lot of stigma. So we have to collect quantitative information. We saw that in the Copperhead study, but also qualitative data. We need to know the real conditions, the quality of the services that will allow, and also to allow us to listen to the people who are impacted. And also we need to have exchanges of good practices in the countries, among the people, among the regions, under the support of the Pompidou Group, Coppolat, and IURA, of course. That's all. Thank you.
That was Professor Karina Giacomello, PhD, a researcher at the Institute for Judicial Studies at the Autonomous University of Chiapas, speaking on a webinar entitled Health and Social Responses for Women Who Use Drugs, Perspectives from Latin America, the Caribbean, and Europe, which was held recently by the European Union Drugs Agency in collaboration with the cooperation program between Latin America, the Caribbean, and the European Union on drug policies. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Find this edition of Century, along with an archive of past shows, at the Drug Truth Network website, drugtruth.net. You'll find a link there to subscribe to the Century of Lies podcast. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so.
For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.